Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. I always feel like the bad guy, like the teacher in the fun class that comes in and stops all the fun, makes you stop talking. Sunday mornings are getting kind of difficult. We have people on Sunday morning with the live stream. And they're all talking and having fun and all in a good church mood. And I come walking in, open your Bibles up to Luke chapter 1 for the seventh week in a row. And it's like, just feel the air go right out of the balloon. You know, so... Yeah, I feel like I should just stay in the basement and keep studying, and Tony can bring out some cinnamon rolls or something, everybody just have a good time. But anyway, tonight, thank you for coming. It means a lot that you're here. I appreciate it. We are in Genesis chapter 18. I'll read through the text very quickly. What you see happening here in chapter 18, it's basically got two parts, as you know. It's going to have the announcement to Sarah that she's going to have a son by this time next year. And then Abraham is the host in the first part of the chapter, and then becomes the intercessor in the second half for the city of Sodom and his nephew Lot over there. And on that first page there, I've just got three maps for you. One is a map. I made this map, the first one, back in like 1987, 88, and then I had an update where Sodom is at since the recent excavations. We'll spend some time, either next week or the week after, however we work it in, talking about Tel El Haman, the actual site, which appears to be Sodom. Not everyone agrees with it, of course, but it's amazing the things that are being found there, and you're probably familiar with it, but that's located right there, Sodom. But this story begins today where Abram is going to be in Hebron at the great trees of Mamre. So you can see it there. And then he's going to walk with them to some point where they're going to look down at Sodom. And the two angels are going to go ahead into Sodom, and that's where it's going to pick up. I don't want to say a lot of confusion, but there's some mysterious ways that the reference to God and Adonai and the angels in this story and in others is like, why is the Lord traveling with two angels? And then when they go into Sodom, the angels go, but the Lord doesn't, but yet the Lord is there. And so it's just, and that's the way it is throughout. We're going to see in chapter 21 eventually when Abram offers Isaac, there's going to be an angel speaking to him, but then the Lord speaking to him. Sometimes the angel and the Lord are both in the story. Sometimes the angel is the Lord. And we'll see several things tonight, especially in the plural and the singular here in the beginning of the chapter. The next map I've got is just a map we've looked at earlier, showing Abram's journey through Shechem, down between Bethel and Ai, down to Hebron into the Negev. And I got the city of Hebron kind of at the bottom there, right above the Negev, so you can see where Hebron's at. That's where the trees of Mamre are. And then if you follow the line back up, he's going to go past Bethlehem, past Jerusalem. And then somewhere around Bethel, somewhere in there, it would appear, that's where he's talking with, and we're not sure where it's at, where he's talking with the Lord about Sodom. If it's just outside of Hebron and they're looking down, and Sodom, where I've got it marked right there, it's Sodom in the book of Genesis. It's going to get destroyed. And by the time Moses comes by, it's called Shittim. And then today, it's called Tel El Hamam. And that site is being excavated. And so you just kind of see where Hebron is, where Sodom is. And somewhere along that line, they're going to be talking, traveling. And the men are walking, the three men, the trio is walking in on Abram. And Abram's sitting in front of his tent in the heat of the day, and he flies into action as a host, as we'll see. In that middle map, in the right bottom right corner, Hebron to Jerusalem is 28 miles. So if you look at Hebron on the map, then follow that gray line past Bethlehem, right there's Jerusalem, that's 28 miles. Then from Jerusalem to Bethel, if you continue to go north up to Bethel, that's another 10 miles. And then between Bethel and Jerusalem, we talked on Sunday about the hill country of Judea, where Zechariah and Elizabeth lived, where John the Baptist's parents lived. there you can see between Bethel and Ai would probably be a good location. You can see the city of Anathoth there. Gibeah, that's the high place just north of Jerusalem. Nob is in that area. That's kind of the general area where a lot of priests would live in the hill country of Judah. One reason, because it's so close to the temple, they could serve their time and go back. But that just kind of gives you location. And then from Jerusalem to Tel El Hamam, the best I could come up with quickly as I was doing this is it's 100 miles, but that's today's route, following Route 1. And so I just gave you a cut and paste there on the bottom. That's Jerusalem, or Bethel is circled. Jerusalem is circled, and Tel El Hamam is circled, and that's a 100-mile journey from Jerusalem to what was ancient Sodom. And that's, you know, that's Google Maps right there. But I've also got circled there Hebron. So you can kind of see where Hebron, Jerusalem, and Tel El Hamam or Sodom are. And because they're all in this story, chapter 18 and 19, those places are in this story. Also, just for reference, for future reference, at the bottom of that, on the middle map, I've got it underlined at right there at the very bottom of the middle map, and then I've got it circled. That's Beersheba. That's where Abram's going to be digging wells here in the future. And it's right there. It's a different world between Bethel and the hill country of Judah, coming down to Jerusalem, coming through Hebron, and then by the time you get to Beersheba, you're in the Negev. I mean, you need a well. And so it's about, as you can see there, you know, 30, 40 miles covering that whole area, but the climate can change drastically. And then if you start drifting down towards the coast, going to the west of the map or onto the left, it gets out of the hill country, goes down in the Shephelah, the rolling hills, and then down to the plain where the Gaza Strip is at, right along that, or the coast up to Joppa. Now you're on coastal plains right there. So that's kind of where we're at right there in this story. The second page here, that's kind of where we'll begin. Chapter 17, Abram is told that he's going to have a child. And again, understand this as we go through this. God has been, we're looking at this story, understanding how it all plays out and what it means in the future. Abraham is getting bits and pieces of information, almost like prophecy. And so he knows, for example, he's going to have a son from his own body. Well, okay, with that information, that makes Hagar a viable player. It's like we can be critical, well, you shouldn't have been sleeping with Hagar, but, well, Sarah's not doing it, and, well, it's from my body, so that would fit in with his understanding. Well, that wasn't the right one. And so he comes up with an alternative plan. Well, his first alternative plan, top of page 2, chapter 15, verse 2, was Eliezer. Well, I'll just adopt someone. No, it's going to be from your own body. Okay, well then here comes Hagar. And then Sarah, that was her alternative heir in chapter 16, verse 2. Why don't you sleep with Hagar? Then in chapter 17, God tells him a little bit more. He says, no, you're going to have the son. And Abraham laughs. Well, Sarah now, tonight, a very interesting conversation with Sarah and where she's at and how she plays into the story. She's going to laugh. So both Abram and Sarah have a similar response. And you've got to decide as you go through the story, is that laughter of joy, of happiness, or is the laughter of, this is ridiculous? And because she's going to be described as being old, you know, advanced in years, beyond the age of bearing children. And now this guy is going to come and speak. And he's not speaking to her in tonight's story. He's giving Abraham some final pieces of information, including by this time next year, your wife Sarah will have a child, will have a son. And Sarah is going to be listening, not being talked to. She's in the tent, but she can hear this. And she's not talking to anyone. And her laughter may not have been ha-ha, roll on the floor laughing, as much as in her mind in this monologue of like. And all of a sudden, the guy who's outside the tent talking to Abram begins asking him questions, Abram questions about what's going on inside the tent, and she's not visible. It appears that the guy speaking has his back to the tent, and he's asking Abram questions about what's going on in the tent. And Sarah's like, uh-oh, he's hearing me. I'm not saying anything. He knows what I'm thinking, which is almost like a sign that what he's saying is true. And then she gets scared. And then she ends up lying. That's where this whole story's going. But anyway, that's in chapter 17 and 18 coming up tonight. Point one at the top of page two, this is one more time Isaac's birth is announced. I mean, we've been talking about it since the very beginning, the first time Abram appeared. It appears appears Yahweh and his entourage are heading to inspect Sodom. Now, how this all plays out, and maybe you get some insight, maybe someone else has got more insight, but you have, Abram has had the Lord appear to him, a theophany at different times. Beginning in chapter 12, the Lord appeared to him in Ur of the Chaldeans. And so, and that is a theophany. It's not, you know, when I was a kid and I'd read this, the Lord appeared, the Lord said, you'd always had that mystical, magical feeling of maybe God was speaking to your heart. I feel like God's leading me. And it's kind of like this, we're talking about the Lord appearing and looking at Abram, one being to another, and giving him audible directions. It's not, I felt in my heart, and then he questions a bit later, did I really hear that right? It's like, well, no, we were there, and many times Abram offers a sacrifice or builds an altar because of the encounter. And so he knows these things, he's heard these things, but they've been in little pieces, kind of like we're given, you know, in our case, eschatology, and when it all comes to pass, it's going to make sense. But right now we're trying to put pieces together, just like Abram was trying to figure out, now how am I going to have a son? Is it Eliezer? Will I sleep with Hagar? How's this all going to come to pass? Just like the disciples, Jesus telling them very plainly what's going to happen, like the death, resurrection, and they're trying to piece it together. How's it going to happen? Abraham, we can't think that Abraham understands this, and I think we should consider how little Sarah maybe even knows about this conversation, these appearances that Yahweh has had with Abram. Is he running back and telling her all these details? Possibly. Possibly he's just dismissed it. Like, I'm not sure how this is going to happen. Well, anyway, and then point four, and we'll get into this later. One of the big contrasts in chapter 18, because it plays right into chapter 19, is the two types of hosts. You've got Abram, who is a good host, who's going to have food ready. He's going to hurry, take care of them. He's going to consider it an honor to serve them. He's going to beg them to stay. And then they're going to go into Sodom, where they really don't want to be around Lot. They're just there to kind of inspect. And Lot insists that they come. Lot's best he's going to do is throw down some unleavened bread. You're going to see what Abram's going to do. He's going to get the, they're going to, I mean, it's another one of those stories that's hard for me to understand because of the culture I live in. But when, if you came to my house for, you know, something, we would maybe warm something up. We'd maybe make some coffee. Well, you come on Sunday mornings, many of you, and we don't do anything for you except, you know, here's a chair. So I'm not a very good Middle Eastern host. Otherwise, we'd have the carpet rolled out and have all kinds of stuff for you. Maybe I should reconsider my ways. But to think, if Tony had, like, she started making bread now, especially all this stuff about sugar and ingredients, she's really going this, making her own bread, which it's pretty cool how she does it. People have done it for millenniums, I guess, but she can do it too. But they're going to start baking the bread when the guests arrive. He's going to send a servant out to go get a calf. Not just go out and grab some pizzas. You know, I'll call ahead, call the Uber or whatever. But they're going to call, or whatever they call that. But they're going to have to butcher the animal, then cook the animal. And all this is, these guys just sitting around talking. It's just a different kind of a culture because of, you know, the time and place it's taking place. Well, with that, let's go ahead, and I'm going to read through the NIV, and then we've got the notes here in the English Standard, and I'll try not to talk. I kick myself sometimes, not physically, but because I teach through it one time. It's almost like I told Tony, I've got to stop. It's like you've got to come to class, I read through it and teach you the stuff, then I go back and read on my notes, and I teach it like for the second time. It's got to be annoying to some point. So I'll just try to read through this so we've got the context. Chapter 18, verse 1. The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, "If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed and then go on your way. Now that you have come to your servant." And that's how they translate it. "Very well," they said, "do as you say." So Abraham hurried, and you see he's hurried, quick, as all these words are being used. Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. "Quick," he said, "get 3 seahs of fine flour and knead it and bake some bread." Then he ran to the herd, selected a choice tender calf, and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. He then brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set them before them. While they ate, he stood near them under a tree. So he's serving as both the host and the waiter at this time. Then, "Where is your wife, Sarah?" they asked him. "There in the tent," he said. Then the Lord said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Now, he just asked where Sarah was. He's not saying, "Have her come out here." He just says, "Where is she?" And then he begins to speak to Abraham about what's going to take place. Now, Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already old. Now, here's the disqualifier. There's several words in here that this is biologically impossible. Abraham and Sarah were already old and well advanced in years, basically 99 and 89 years old. Abraham and Sarah were already old and well advanced in years, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought. Keywords, laughed to herself, and she thought, "After I am worn out and my master is old, will I now have this pleasure?" And now the word pleasure, you got to make some decisions on pleasure. Is that the pleasure of holding a baby, or is that the pleasure that goes along with producing a child biologically, which would refer to sexual pleasure? And meaning, this is, and that's probably what it's referring to. That's the comment that, "Shall I have this pleasure?" It's like, no, we can't do it anymore. It's basically just like, will we have this pleasure? And just like, basically 99 and 89 year old is like, I don't think that's going to happen. And so she's thinking this to herself, how ridiculous these words are coming from this guy talking to Abram. Then the Lord said, this is the kicker, the whole chapter is right here, besides a few other nuggets. Then the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, will I really have a child now that I am old?" It's like, now the concept there is he's outside talking with Abram. Sarah's in the tent. He's got his back to the tent, so he can't see her. He can't hear her. She's inside. She can hear him talking, but she responds to herself in her own monologue, and then she laughs to herself. So there's no sound, there's no appearance. He's not reading her face. Why are you laughing? Like if you're teaching class somewhere, it's like, hey, why are you laughing at me? You know, you can read kids' face or expressions. But the Lord's just sitting out there talking to Abraham, and then he says, "Why did Sarah laugh when I said this?" And Sarah's like, she all of a sudden realizes she's not even been addressed. The only thing that has happened is Abraham comes in and says, "Make some bread." That's all that's happened. But now all of a sudden, they're talking about her, and now they're hearing her thoughts, understanding her expressions, and she's freaked out. I mean, it's like, this guy's doing magic tricks here in front of my tent. Or he knows what he's talking about. "Why did Sarah laugh and say, will I really have a child now that I am old?" And then the Lord continues with a couple rhetorical questions. Is anything too hard for the Lord? And if you'll notice, Lord there in all these references to Lord is Yahweh, except when Abram says, my Lord, that's Adonai, my master. Otherwise, when it's identifying the Lord as a person, or when he says, is anything too hard for Yahweh? That's L-O-R-D in capital letters in the NIV. Is anything too hard for Yahweh? I'll return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son. Verse 15, Sarah was afraid because, So she lied and said, I did not laugh. But he says, yes, you did laugh. And that's the end of the story. And it's like, I didn't laugh. The only thing Sarah says to the Lord is a lie. I didn't laugh. And the Lord says, yes, you did. And that's how it's just, Sarah's just frozen there in time, like what's going to happen. And we'll pick some of that stuff up. Okay, on to the notes. Once again, we chapter 18, verse 1. And the Lord appeared to him by the oaks of Mamre, page 2, in the English Standard Version, as he sat at the door of his tent in the heat of the day. So it's the heat of the day. It appears it's springtime. And so again, the crops are getting ready to come up. It's too hot to be working at this time. And the Lord appeared to him. So when it says the Lord, you get the impression it is indeed a theophany. In fact, a few things. This is the third theophany to Abraham. You've got chapter 12, verse 7, chapter 17, verse 1, where they cut the covenant. And now chapter 18, verse 1, where the Lord is intervening or appearing to Abraham. And again, that ties right into, we've said it before, right when Jesus says, you know, Abraham believed, and they say, you're not yet 50 years old, and you say that Abraham, that you talked to Abraham. He says, before Abraham was, I am. So even Jesus has, if we want to say, a memory or a recall of his theophanies appearing to Abram, and he refers to him when he's addressing the religious leaders. So Jesus confirms this. The first three appearances, the word appeared is used, and which would refer to, again, he's actually, this is not a little voice in his heart, you know, an impression that I just feel God's leading me. This is the Lord appearing physically and speaking to Abraham. Chapter, or point two, three men, the only place in the Bible that a trio appears together like this. You have the Lord appearing, you have angels appearing, but this is unique with three men appearing. Then we find out late as we go through, one is the Lord. Chapter 18, verse 22, clearly one of them is the Lord. And then chapter 19, verse 1, clearly two of them are angels. In a sense, all three could be referred to as angels, and that's common, where one of the angels is the Lord himself, called the angel of the Lord. He's the messenger. He's come with a message from the Lord, but he's God himself. In these chapters, they're overseeing two major announcements: the birth of Isaac and the destruction of Sodom. And again, I'm not sure how these fit together. I read some commentaries and they try to fit these together like one represents this and one represents whatever. But it's like the best I could come up with is they're on their way to investigate Sodom because they're going to destroy it if the reports they've heard are true. And they're stopping by Abraham because this is going to happen next year. So it's like there's just simultaneously events taking place. It would be interesting to continue to think about why are these are the same events. I mean, this appearance, this theophany leads into the destruction of Sodom. One connection is this is going to be the production of the nation of Israel. The Sodom story is going to be the production of two nations coming from Lot, from his Moab and Ammon. And then following chapter 19, as we see in several other places, starting with Cain, but also Esau, Ishmael, Moab and Ammon, what comes after the story is then the genealogy of all the peoples that come from like Moab and Ammon, or from Esau, that's all coming up. They record all the peoples. So it may be to do with the nations. Chapter 18, point four right there. Chapter 19 switches from angels to God back and forth. Chapter 18, verse 2. Now, it says, he lifted up his eyes, Abraham did, and looked, and behold, three men were standing in front of him. Now, they just all of a sudden appeared, or whether they come walking up. When he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth. Now, I've got this written down because this is interesting. Point one, this is, again, one of the things that happens in these verses is the switching between he's talking with the Lord or the Lord is the focus, but yet sometimes it's plural, it's they. And so, for example, chapter 18, verse 2, three men. Chapter 18, verse 3, that's all going to be singular. Chapter 18, verse 4, it's plural in the second person. Instead of he, it's going to be, you. 18:19 is plural. 18:9 is plural. 18:10 through 15, that's all singular. 18:16 is plural again. 18:17 through 21 is singular. And then 18:22 begins plural and ends singular. And there's one more. 18:22 through 23 is singular. But Abraham only addresses one of them. He addresses the Lord. So as you go through this, you can kind of trace that, seeing this switch back and forth, which again adds to the confusion. Are we talking to one person? Are we talking to three people? Is it three angels? Is one of them God? And that's just something that a lot of people try to make stuff out of it. I think it's the focus. The worst explanation, if you want the worst explanation of it, which I think is that these are two traditions, two stories coming from two different sources that Moses is copying together, and Moses is so ignorant that he can't edit his own writing. So this says him, he, or singular. This says they and them, and he brings it together, and he doesn't clean up his editing mess, which makes Moses basically a terrible editor of not being able to tell the difference. If you're going to combine two sources, you better kind of clean it up if you're going to produce your final work. And I think that's just a very lame excuse coming out of the 1800s. And that's what you call higher criticism. And it produces the liberal movement in Christianity. It's worthless. So I don't think that's the case here. I think there's something mystical going on, if anything, where you've got the Lord, but he's with these angels, and what's taking place in this conversation. Okay, chapter 18, verse 3. And said, O Lord, and this is now Lord, this would be Adonai. So it appears, and this is where you got to decide, does Abram recognize the Lord? Does he realize he's talking to Yahweh? I mean, that appeared to him in Ur, that he cut a covenant with while he was in a trance. Or is he going to be surprised that this is the Lord appearing to him like, he's changed his hair and he's a little bit shorter this time. I think he knows when he sees him, it's like, oh my gosh, it's another theophany. The Lord has appeared to me again. And I'm going to go with that. And so he calls him, O Lord, referring to him as Adonai, Master. And then he bases this whole thing on God showing him favor. He says, if I have found favor in your sight, do not pass by your servant. Please, if I found favor, stay. Let's have some time together. Or let me serve you. And then he says in chapter 18, that verb, do not pass by, is singular. So he says, O Lord, if I found favor in your sight, do not pass by. And that is singular. I mean, he's not talking to three men, he's talking to the Lord. And the two angels, they're not in that verb. Now, why aren't they in that verb? He's talking to Adonai, Yahweh. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourself under the tree. So the water would be for drinking. The water would also be for washing your feet. See, that a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourself. So the first water is refreshing to drink. The next water is wash your feet, which is common hospitality, and rest yourself under the tree. Now, point one, the plural verb addresses all three to stay. So now the verb in chapter 18, verse 4, it was singular. Now it becomes plural. Now he's talking to all three sitting down. It's honor and respectfully. He asks them to stay. He uses the word please, N-A or na in Hebrew, twice. So he's begging them for the honor of please, let me serve you. Let me be your host. Abraham is acting hospitably. Now, again, this is important. He is not making an offering. There's nothing in here. He has no agenda. He's not going to, please stay, I've got a question I want to ask you. The favor he wants is for you to stay. It's not like, here, let me get you something to eat because I've got a favor to ask of you. He's not going to say, hey, you said something about a son, I just kind of want some more details. He's just wanting to be hospitable. The one who's going to bring up the childbearing is going to be the Lord, which indicates right here, and this is worth looking into, because when you go into the Ugaritic text, But there's stories of like a god appearing or them going off and meeting a god. And when they'd offer sacrifice, they'd prepare a meal for the god. And then the god would come down and partake of the meal and maybe give them a blessing. And it'd be more like a sacrifice and some kind of meal with the god. That's something you see in the pagan mythologies, the Ugaritic texts that are common at this time. But this does not, I mean, so that you guys say, ah, is this something, some kind of a ritual that they're familiar with? It seems like it's just a meal for one. Abraham is asking for them to stay so he can serve them. And Abram is not asking for anything. The Lord himself has come with a message, it appears, for Abram. And so, that's point four under 18:4. Abram is acting hospitably, but is not offering a sacrifice. Abram is not the one who brings up childbearing. He doesn't bring this food out and says, now if I found favor, I got a question I'd like to ask you to do for me. The Lord does it all on his own. So I don't think that's even the case. Chapter 18, verse 5. While I bring a morsel of bread, so you wash your feet and rest, while I bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh yourselves, meaning eat, and after that you may pass on. After you're done eating, you can continue in a way, but give me the honor of being your host. Since you have come to your servant, since you're here, I can see you, let me serve you. So they said, do as you have said. And notice right there that's translated, so they said. So there you get that, you're mixing up, he's talking singular, they're plural, now they're plural, they're going to go back to singular. Do as you have said. Chapter 18, verse 6, and Abram went quickly into the tent to Sarah and said, now this is where we meet Sarah, she's in the tent. She's going to be in the tent this whole time. She's not going to be seen. He says, and her only role is to make bread. He says, quick, 3 seahs of fine flour, knead it and make cakes or make bread. Now, just some interesting facts about this, and again, I'm not sure how accurate this would be, but 3 seahs of fine flour seems to be quite a bit of flour, like she's going to be making quite a bit of bread. In 1 Samuel 25:8, if you know the story, Abigail is making provisions for David and his band of men, his band of outlaws, and she makes for the whole, his whole standing military that's running with him in the wilderness, makes bread for all of them out of 5 seahs of flour. So David and his standing military is going to eat bread out of 5 seahs. Sarah's supposed to use 3 seahs to make bread for 3 guys. Now, Abraham's not going to be eating the bread. Sarah's not. I mean, if you came to my house and Tony's making a meal, we'd all sit down. Tony would sit down and she'd be part. I would sit down. I definitely would sit down. But this is Sarah still in the tent. Abraham is going to be standing back by the tree watching them eat. They're eating. So this is 3. This is like a sea of flour for each individual. That's just the information. Elijah's made a trench around the altar on Mount Carmel and filled it with 12 jars of water. It was so big that there was enough room for 2 seahs of seed to fill in the trench. So if you take 2 seahs of seed, filling in the trench around the altar, add another seah to it, that's how much fine flour he brings in for Sarah to make bread. And again, the timing factor, I mean, how long, these guys show up, we're going to need bread, we're going to bake bread, it should be ready in 20 minutes, we're not going to microwave it, I mean, how long is it going to take? Got to go get it, grind it, whatever. Okay, and Abram ran quickly to the herd, took a calf, a tender and good, and gave it to a young man who prepared it quickly. So he went out, that's a fine animal to just cut up and serve for food. But Abram's giving these guys the best. And again, you got to butcher the calf, you got to cook the calf. And he took curds and milk and the calf that he had prepared and set it before them. The curds and milk, the curds would be something that would help bring the flavor out of the meat. They're just like a little side dish that would help kind of enhance the meal. And then, of course, something to drink. The milk with something to drink would also help the flavor, but also have something to drink while you're eating. They said to him, now while they're eating, I should read this. They took the curds and milk and the calf he had prepared. Now, this just flies by in 2-3 verses, and you can see it. Quickly, he's running, he's hurrying, he's telling everyone else to be quick, and so it appears to be quick, but again, think about all that they're doing and the amount of food that they're bringing out. But when it gets laid out, It says, then he took the curds and milk and the calf that he had prepared and set it before them. And he, Abraham, stood by them under the tree while they ate. He's not sitting down talking with them. He's standing by the tree, making sure they've got everything. So just it's just an odd situation. You've got you're serving lunch to three angels. I mean, now do angels eat food? Angel food cake, that's the joke you'd say right there. But it's like, no, what are they? Does the Lord need food? What is going on here? Does Abraham think they're real men? Does he know that they're angels? He apparently recognizes one of them as the Lord. What is his understanding of the Lord? Like, he's just taking on this. In my mind, the Lord is spirit. And if he appears to us, he just appears in a theophany, like a vision of some sort. But then he compound that with word became flesh, and now you got Jesus in a resurrected body. And now if he comes, it's like now, you got all this. What is Abraham seeing in all this? And why does he think what these guys need is some food? I mean, they travel at the speed of thought, but yet they're walking in, or are they just appearing? But he's got the meal ready for them. So anyway, so they're eating, and they don't just say, well, thank you very much. This is a nice gesture, but we don't really eat anything. So, but the Lord and the angels are sitting down eating this food. Like, again, it's a world that I don't fully understand. You can pretend you understand it, but I struggle with it sometimes as I try to make sense of it. The point here in chapter 18, verse 9, the whole thing this is all about is right here. They said to him, where is Sarah, your wife? And he said, she is in the tent. Now, these are big statements. Out of nowhere, Sarah's never come up. I mean, she's not involved in any situation with the Lord. The Lord's never appeared to her. We don't know really how much information Abraham has shared with Sarah. I mean, because of my relationship with Tony, I would think I would have shared quite a bit with her, and she would have said, I've heard that before. I mean, it would be like, we've gone over this before. It's like, come on. And then Tony would be like doing her due diligence of like, oh. And she'd be nice, and she'd be listening, but it's like, he said this 100 times. So that would be my relationship with Tony. But I'm not sure how much Sarah knows about it. Tony would be able to complete the story for Abram. Yes. And then he said, I'm not sure how much Sarah knows. But he does say, where is Sarah, your wife? And he said, she is in the tent. And that is just kind of, well, right there, point three. Abraham's answer is, Hina ba'ohel. And ohel is the word for tent. Ba is in. And that is, behold, is hina, behold. Behold in the tent. And it's really like, where's Sarah? And it'd probably be like, in the tent. I mean, it's not like, oh, Sarah, these guys want to say hi. Where's Sarah? In the tent. I mean, it's a probably with a hand motion. It probably didn't turn around like she's in the tent. Like, who cares? I mean, like, and so she's being brought into this situation. So she hears her name. No one's talking to her. She's not part of the story except she's got the bread made. Thank you, Sarah. And I'm not sure if he said thank you. And again, I've got those two things written down. Chapter 15, verse 4. Let me flip back there. 15, verse 4. These are the previous, this is the details. Chapter 15, verse 4. Then the word of the Lord came to him. This man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. Okay, so he's going to become a mighty nation, but how is this going to take place? It can take place a variety of ways. You can conquer some people. You can, buy some slaves. I don't know. But now, the first thing is, you're going to have a son from your own body. He doesn't say, you and Sarah. I just want you to notice the lack of detail in these prophecies or in these promises of just know you're going to have a son. This Eliezer is not going to be the heir. It's going to be a son from your own body. Chapter 17, verse 16, and we saw this. Chapter 17, verse 15, God also said to Abram, as for Sarah, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. So now, it's not Hagar, it's Sarah's going to be the one who has the son. Now a year has gone by, and now he's waiting, just waiting the heat of the day. Now the Lord shows up and says, where is Sarah, your wife? She is in the tent. And now we're going to get some more specifics. We're going to find out by this time next year, Sarah will have a child. She'll have a son. And interestingly, I will surely return. Now it's coming up here. Chapter 18, verse 10 on page 4. And the Lord said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah your wife shall have a son. Now, before we go on, go to chapter 21. Now notice what the Lord says. The Lord said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah your wife shall have a son. So in 1 year, the Lord is going to return, and when he returns, Sarah will have a son. Now in chapter 21, verse 1, it says, Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. And Sarah became pregnant and bore a son. So Abraham, in his old age, at that very time, God had promised him. So you have right there, it says Yahweh, if you read it in English Standard, Yahweh visited Sarah as he had said, and Yahweh did to Sarah as he had promised. If you got some other translations, you may see something more detailed in there like that. And so he is, in chapter 21, he is going to return, and he is going to do what he said. Now, Sarah's going to pick this up when she gets into the details here. Let me read this. And the Lord said this, in chapter 18, verse 10, and Sarah was listening at the tent behind him. So when it says, that's good information, behind him. So the Lord is sitting with his back to the tent, so he can't see her. He's not going, this is part of the miracle, the sign of the story. And Abraham motions, she's in the tent. He says, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. And Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him. Now, chapter 18, verse 11. Here's a list of things. She hears this, but here's all of the excuses, and it's important. And now, Abram and Sarah were old. That's one. Advanced in years. The way of women had ceased to be with Sarah, meaning she can no longer, her body is no longer producing in a way that she can get pregnant. It's physically impossible. And I've got these things written down. I don't have this on the notes here. Old, advanced in years, literally it means coming with days, and past the age of childbearing, literally, as the way of women had ceased for Sarah's. And then that next word, I've said it before. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, after I am worn out and my Lord is old, I'm exhausted. I mean, physically unable to produce a child. And my Lord, my man, is old. He's not going to do anything about it. Shall I have pleasure? I mean, I think that's tying in the concept of I am a female, he is a male. We are no longer functioning as male and female, and there's going to be no pleasure. There's nothing going to happen. I mean, this is not going to happen. It's not like a stretch, because like I said, 99 and 89 years old, it's not like, I mean, okay, I don't need to go on with that. Shall I have this pleasure? Meaning, that's not, I mean, basically saying, well, that's not going to happen. And she's laughing, not ha-ha, but the laughing is, that's out of the question. That's beyond reality. Sarah knows the man speaking. Okay, where is this? Oh, yeah, here. I got two verses. Hebrew, here, let me write them down. Go to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 11. That's about Sarah. And go to Romans chapter 4, verse 19. These are just insight into a little bit of what is the way the New Testament refers to this. Because it's definitely embracing the concept that Sarah is, we'll just say, dead. She's alive, but this is physically beyond the question. This is gonna take something supernatural to take, like Ishmael and or Hagar and Abram producing Ishmael was not supernatural. Now God came down and intervened in their life. He blessed Ishmael. He blessed Hagar. He's going to become his own nation. God is going to bless them. We're going to follow up with that activity. But Ishmael is the result of Abraham sleeping with Hagar, a man being with a fertile woman and producing a child. I mean, it happens every day. And then God came and blessed him. This situation, chapter 11 of Hebrews, verse 11, it says in the NIV, oh, I wish I would have got this in the English Standard, by faith, Abram, and that should, what, does anybody have the English Standard with them? What, you? Okay, I'm going to read the NIV, and I've crossed some things off in the NIV. By faith, Abraham, and I've crossed it off and wrote Sarah, even though he or she was past age, and Sarah herself was barren and unable to become a father because she considered him faithful. Boy, okay, that's all messed up. Let me just read it without my corrections. By faith, Abram, even though he was past age and Sarah herself was barren, was unable to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. What does the English Standard say? Is it different? Chapter 11 of Hebrews, verse 11.
By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age.
Okay, beautiful. Even Sarah, see, received power, what else? To conceive. So she's receiving something and she's conceiving, but it's not Hagar style, because it's in the text there. And even in Hebrews, anybody else got anything interesting else in that trend? You see how the NIV tries to bring it together. They've got a footnote. It says, by faith, even Sarah, who was past age, was enabled to bear children because she was faithful. Okay, anybody else want to say something about that? Yes, sir.
The one thing that closed out on that 11 verse, though, was after they said, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised.
So they're using Sarah. That chapter 11, of course, is about people having faith. Yeah. So we can't just, as I read it, you can't just dismiss Sarah as being unfaithful. Yeah. But the context as this being presented here is she's going to laugh, say, how can this be? And so you can say at this moment as we're reading this that she's like, that's ridiculous. But God is going to respond asking two rhetorical questions to Abraham for her to hear. Is anything too incredible for God? Nothing's impossible for me. And so that might have been a thing that, well, along with the fact that she's in the tent, she can't see the Lord can't see her, she doesn't holler out, well, that's not going to happen. And he hears it. She's thinking in her mind, well, like, that's not going to happen. And she's laughing. Her attitude is one of, if you want to say, mockery, not making fun of the Lord, but it's like, you can say what you want to say. But then when the Lord interrupts her thought process and identifies her mocking or her attitude, identifies what she's talking to in her head, she's like, and then he asks, and shows now she's afraid. Uh-oh. And then he asks Abram, is anything too hard for the Lord? And she might be like, I mean, that might have been that moment that she has that, because she doesn't start off with faith, but when this event takes place, she's mocking, he confronts her supernaturally, she's afraid, and then he gives her a reason to believe. Nothing's impossible for God. Then she's like, possibly. Now, Romans chapter 4. This is Paul addressing this. Romans 4, 19. I'll begin in, let's begin in verse 18. If you guys got something else, because a lot of times we're trying to figure the translations out, who's the context here. Verse 18 of Romans 4. Against all hope, Abraham in hope believed, and so became the father of many nations, just as it had been said to him, so shall your offspring be. Without weakening in his faith, he faced the fact that his body was as good as dead. Okay, now again, he's old, he's alive, but in the context, what we're talking about is, now put this in perspective. He's not in a nursing home old. I mean, he's old like 99, but Isaac's going to be a teenager, and he's going to go up on Mount Moriah with Isaac and strap him on an altar to sacrifice him. I mean, that's not the work of an old man out of the nursing home that needs a walker. So, I mean, he's still physically functioning and is able to move quickly. I mean, you know, just the fact that he moved quickly, he ran here, he's doing this, he's still moving around. So the context, what I'm trying to bring that home for, is face the fact that his body was as good as dead. We're talking reproductive. We're talking about him and Sarah finding pleasure. It's not going to happen. Without weakening in his faith, he faced the fact that his body was as good as dead, meaning we're not going to produce this child like Hagar and I produced a child. This is a promise of God. It's coming from another source. Since he was about 100 years old, and that Sarah's womb was also dead. And that is what she's saying, the way of women has passed her by. Her womb is dead. So they're not going to have any kind of, you know, in this context, sexual encounter or involvement where they're going to naturally produce a son. Yet he did not waver through unbelief regarding the promise of God, but was strengthened in his faith and gave glory to God, being fully persuaded that God had power to do what he had promised. This is why it was credited to him as righteousness, and with the words. Okay. So with those right there, you've got Romans, you've got Hebrews supporting this concept of dead, and we know they're neither one of them are physically like on their last breath, but she's going to receive power. She's going to conceive. And so as we go back to the notes here on page 4, I'm going to get my other notes out here. Chapter 18, verse 13, the Lord had said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, shall I indeed bear a child now that I am old? And that's where Sarah hears him say that. If anybody hears, Sarah's the one who is hearing. Is anything too hard for the Lord? The Lord says. At the appointed time, I'll return to you about this time next year, and Sarah will have a son. Now again, I don't want to read too much into that, because when Abram went into Hagar, she conceived, and then she knew what had happened, and she began to prance around showing Sarah that she was pregnant and Sarah wasn't, and Sarah felt offended. There doesn't seem to be any plan of how they're going to make this take place. They seem like they're both admitting. It seems like the New Testament admits. Go back to Sunday morning in Luke. Zechariah was told your wife Elizabeth in the old age is going to have a son, John the Baptist. It leaves room in that story that he goes home, follows up with the promise, and she conceives and gives birth to a child, which is, you know, a natural birth. Then you've got the story of Mary, where there's clearly a virgin birth. The power of the Lord, you'll be overshadowed. What is the two words? It is, will overshadow like the Shekinah glory, and the Spirit will come upon like coming upon a field and making it fertile. Those are the two words that were used. We're doing that on Sunday morning. This almost seems, I'm just pointing this out, it seems almost like this is more supernatural than it is, you know, Abram and Sarah one more time And now this time it took place. Because the whole context is, no, everything is shut off. There's no way this is an impossible feat. It's going to have to be God. And it almost leaning more towards, I'm not going to say, you know, another virgin birth like this, like Christ, but some kind of supernatural occurrence. Well, obviously it's supernatural. Okay, so Sarah denied it. It says, is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I'll return to you about this time next year, and Sarah will have a son. But Sarah denied it, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. He says, no, but you did laugh. Then the men set out from there. And on the notes here that I've got written down, I think I've said everything. I'm trying to see if I got something else written down. Sarah's afraid. Oh, yeah, 18:15. I want to say this, 18:15. But Sarah denied it, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. And he says, in the English Standard, no, but you did laugh. In the Hebrew, it is, the word is ki for yes, and it's, oh, yes, you did laugh. It is the emphatic, like, no, I didn't laugh. It's like, oh, yes, you did laugh. That is more like, yes, you did. You do not believe this. But now all this dialogue's taking place, and she's having a dialogue with the Lord, and she does, I guess that's the point. She's having a dialogue with the Lord, and she doesn't realize that she is, which is, again, that humbling experience of everything you think, everything you talk to yourself about, the Lord can interrupt at any time. And in this case, it's not in her heart. It's not, I feel like the God's impressing. He's in front of the tent outside having lunch with the angels as Abraham's watching, and he's talking to you in the tent while you're thinking, this is not going to happen. And the Lord is talking physically to you about what's going on in your head. And Sarah obviously was like afraid. And that's probably where we saw earlier where she had faith. It's like, oh my gosh, this is going to happen. So again, Sarah ends up being one of the heroes of faith. But you, I mean, obviously, you can't be critical of her and say, well, she should have had more faith. Than all of the things that Sarah has done, even saying, hey, what about Hagar? Here, let's solve it with Hagar. I can be critical of that now, but if you're in that situation, it'd be like, that would solve the problem. Now, how many times in our own life, I think about my own life, where God's working a plan, and I say, you know what? The Bible doesn't say specifically that you shouldn't do it this way. You realize it's God may be working a plan. There's a place of being, having self-initiative and following God's leading, following the word of God. But there's also a place of just putting a stop and saying, no, this is God's plan. I'm going to let God work this out. Yeah, but you could, you know, generation word. You could advertise. You could get radio spots. You could send flyers to all the local churches and be a guest speaker. Go on a speaking tour. You got all, it's like, now believe me, I'm 64. I'm going to be 65 in April. It's like, it's not like, why didn't you ever try that? What do you mean? What do you think I've been doing for 65 years? It's like, I recorded a 45 record in 1979. First thing I did was write Christian music. I was a Christian rock star. Well, I wasn't a star, and I don't know if you can call it right. It's more noise than anything. But I already tried to save the world with music. And then I followed God down to Tulsa. We're going to do this. And I got down and thought, I'll create Christian card games. We market them all across the nation. And then we're going to do here. We're going to try. It's like, all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute. You've tried. I've been not like Hagar and Abraham and Sarah. I haven't done, you know, in that context, but I have had my Hagar experiences of trying to follow God's will, and God's like, okay, well, yeah, you make a bunch of Christian games and print thousands of copies and get them in Sunday schools across the nation. Okay, I'll bless that. There's kids still remember playing Christian card games by Galen Games in 1987 and 88, and it led them a little bit in their faith. It was some of their childhood memories. Okay, but yeah, that's not what we're talking about. Well, what about my music? Well, I wrote still songs on YouTube of me singing songs. I made a little cassette tape down in Tulsa, handed it out. I sold it, not sold it, but gave people use it. It's like, okay, we got some music Galen wrote, but it's like, that's not it. So it's like, I've definitely got my, in a sense, Hagar's that God says, okay, that wasn't very supernatural, but I'll use it. And you're, but you're all still waiting, you know, in our own lives, waiting for what is God doing? Where is that time where God is going to just, the breath of God comes in and just brings something. It's his plan, just brings it alive. You know, I mean, we all got things we're doing, and we should. But here's Hagar, or Sarah and Abram. They've got their own plans. God said, no, this is not it. And then in chapter 21, it says he shows up, and he does what he says, and she conceives. So at some level, this pregnancy is God's plan. Everything else he's put up with, but now this is him going to do this, and this thing is going to have ramifications for the rest of history because of Sarah receiving what God is going to do. Now, with that, I've got to quit. It goes on from there after that meal. Now, again, so she's going to have a child in a year. Isaac's going to be born. There's more things going to take place. But this chapter, it's not just a chapter break, because the men stand up from the meal and they start heading to Sodom. It's almost like they're on their way to Sodom and stop by Abraham's tent on their way to Sodom. And they're going to go down, and we'll talk about what's taking place in Sodom, of course. But I also want to spend some time looking at the archaeology and showing you some things. I've never been there, so I don't have my own pictures. But it really appears to be the location of Sodom and the things that took place. So this event leads right into that. And all of a sudden, you're at a place where the Bible is like surprisingly true, and we've got almost like footprints and fingerprints of divine manifestations in archaeology and history. I'll pray, and we're free to go. If you guys have any questions or insights, please feel free to share them. Father, we thank you for the chance to look into your word. We thank you for the opportunity to study your word, to be in a country that is free, that we can proclaim your word. We ask that we would be diligent enough to follow your word and allow your spirit to work in our lives, to produce the things you want to do in our lives, and help us to encourage others to do the same thing, that they also may experience the joy of serving you and accomplishing the things in their life that you've called them to. We do thank you for this opportunity. In Jesus' name, amen.